from proving bomb parts can get through front door screenings to examining the Fort Hood shootings. The Government Accountability Office has been following the federal insider threat situation for years. Its work covers both the physical world and cyberspace. I spoke with Joseph Kirschbaum, the GAO's Director of Defense Capabilities and Management, about the range of work he's overseen.
We've looked at insider threats based on the Department of Defense's programs that were required by the federal government in 2011, by executive order, required all federal departments and agencies to establish insider threat programs. So we've examined those programs, how they're running, and it's important to note here that we've looked at them in terms of the specific programs and in broad context. And by that I mean there's two real sides to it. There's the traditional physical security side of it. And shorthand for that is guns, guards, and gates. And then there's the information cyber side of it. We looked at, in 2015 in particular, we did two separate reports looking at both of those programs. The physical side of it looked particularly at improvements the Department of Defense was trying to make in response to the Fort Hood shooting. And particularly the Fort Hood shootings in 2009, there was a series of official reviews that recommended very specific actions that the Department of Defense take. We were following up on those as a lens to look at that aspect of the insider threats program. The other side was the looking at information systems, threats to information systems and from insiders. And in that regard, we looked throughout all the department's efforts in terms of their program. And really, we looked at them separately, but they are intricately linked, and we can chat more about that. But in essence, we found in both cases very similar things to what we find when we're looking at these kind of programs, and these kind of programs being security programs, physical security programs. We found that on the one hand, the Department of Defense has clear structures in place. They have doctrine, they have planning, they have training in place that relates to parts of the program, but it kind of doesn't come together as a whole. So we found those kind of gaps and holes in how they approach that. So we made recommendations to improve their programs throughout that area. The definition of insider threats is important because it gets to the scope of the matter. So insider threats are the really looking at the potential for damage to people and information by unwittingly or wittingly, and by people to whom you have, by definition, given access. So it's important because we're talking about those people who mean to do harm, and perhaps even more importantly, as a percentage of actual incidents, the people who don't necessarily mean to do harm, but nonetheless do cause harm.
I guess that's the largest number of cases, probably 90% are the inadvertence, but most of the damage really is done by the malicious insiders, correct?
It depends on how you tally it up, because you're absolutely right. I mean, you certainly get the cases where we're talking about loss of life. That is absolutely the case in terms of the Fort Hood shootings, the Navy Yard shootings. Those were definitely intentional, and that is absolutely the case. On the other side, you know, the information leaks and things, it becomes a little bit more murky. You have some obviously well-publicized cases where you have intentional leaking of information, but you also have, as you mentioned, the vast number of cases where there's actual an insider threat incident tend to be those unwitting cases. And so here we're crossing into the realm of not just potential leaks of information, but we're talking about a lot of mundane things, like people who aren't following the right security procedures and open up a breach that's exploited in some way, shape, or form that could cause damage to networks and such.
Interestingly, that Congress ordered this program that you are part of in 2011. This was before the Edward Snowden affair, indicating that cybersecurity breaches from insiders didn't start with that one, famous and notorious as it's become.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't take a whole lot of vision to appreciate the potential weaknesses of information systems and what the damage might potentially be caused by someone who you've given access to, but you don't necessarily know when that person may decide to do something nefarious. However, it becomes a lot harder when you think about ways to prevent that.
And you mentioned that this concentrates on DOD, so therefore I would imagine it concentrates on the classified networks, that is, on the cyber side of this.
It does. We concentrated largely on the classified side. However, there are direct analogs to how the unsecure networks, unsecure is the wrong term, the non-classified networks, how they would be protected as well. I mean, it's very similar processes.
Because there might be clues to possible nefarious behavior in the classified realm, but those clues might occur in the unclassified realm.
Absolutely. And that actually gets at one of the fundamental kind of underlying elements of how you approach insider threats, and the fact that it is at the same time a technical issue, but even more so a human issue. And so how you identify where those potential threats may be, it really doesn't make any difference. You're talking about a classified network, an unclassified network, or you're protecting physical systems. You've got to be able to identify where there are technical vulnerabilities and also mate those up with an understanding of the human behavior.
We're speaking with Joseph Kirschbaum. He's director of the Defense Capabilities and Management Topics at the Government Accountability Office. And let's talk about how you do that. And also, I would say, in the context of possible physical threats, in the case of the Fort Hood shooting, which all these years later is still painful to even think about, there must have been, I guess we know now that there were clues in cyberspace as to what was going to happen in real time.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the things that the results from the Fort Hood shooting reports and also the Washington Navy Yard shooting official inquiries, some of the common things that were uncovered were the fact that there were clues, there were bits of information out there that in theory could have been put together. I mean, this is very similar to the story when we talk about things like 9/11 and going all the way back to Pearl Harbor. There were, in theory, clues in place that could have been put together. So the question is, well, how should they have been put together? And should they have been put together? Because in some cases, we're talking about personal information, you know, what's the legal requirement for it to be shared, you know, over and above the should it be shared. And then you also have the element of, even if that information is out there, and if it's collated, how best to share that with the right people at the right time. So a good example of that is one of the things that the results of the Washington Navy Yard shooting uncovered, that a lot of this information was known, but it wasn't shared with the appropriate law enforcement authorities at the right time that could have possibly, you know, mitigated attacks like that. And those kind of things, we're back in that realm of what's technically feasible, what's legally required, and then can you and how you do you share.
Probably most well-thinking people are reluctant to rat on someone that they think maybe, well, there's really nothing there, it's none of my business, or they don't want to impugn someone in a way that might be seen as based on racial or ethnic considerations. So maybe that's one of the sensitivities here, is when do people that can maybe be close to the scene and alert authorities to something that might be going on, how do you give them space to do so in a way that is fair to all individuals?
Absolutely. And one of the major considerations and all elements of the insider threats programs is determining where the balance is between personal security, personal liberties, and personal responsibility. Where that line is between all of those. And as you might imagine, that line is not clear. It's not bright, nor should it be for what we're talking about here. I mean, we're talking about definitely something in the hard-to-do pile. At its heart, you're trying to determine, you being the agency official, the person responsible for physical and information security, you're trying to determine what is it in your organization that's different from the normal, and to the extent to which it's different from the normal, is it nefarious? Just establishing that baseline of what's quote-unquote normal is a horrendously difficult task. Technically and otherwise.
Once the information is shared, who makes the decision, and how do they know when to execute on that decision of to do something about someone? Say it was Hassan in Fort Hood case, or the shooter at the Navy Yard. Who decides what to do, and when do you do it, and what do you do?
I think in those cases, there are existing laws and regulations in place that govern kind of reaction to potential criminal intent or things of that nature when you know there's a threat. Those kind of things are all in place, and they all exist, and they've existed for a long time. The real problem with the insider threats is getting to that point. How do you get to that point where you can, where a security force, for example, can say, okay, here's the imminent threat, we can act now. It's getting to that point. It's the gap between there's a potential threat out there, and there's bits of information that maybe are not pulled together, and then the point where you actually can try to prevent a threat. So that's one of the things the insider threats programs are meant to help. A good example of that is in response to some of the shootings, and also to help implement some of the technical problems of the insider threats program. The Department of Defense they set up an insider threats management center. It's called the DITMAC. You know, in Department of Defense, you get extra credit if you can pronounce the acronym.
Correct.
And what this is supposed to be is a center to help collate this information that's out there, and then it can share it appropriately. So in theory, you can detect issues quicker. You can make something of those detections quicker. So there's not so much of a gap between several people, several sources having information separately, and the point where you can bring those together and understand there's a potential threat here that needs to be acted on, and share that information more rapidly with the people who need to. That's the intent behind organizations like that.
You almost need the fusion center or network operations center approach to this particular issue.
I think that's exactly a good way to characterize that.
And are there technological tools that can help in this area, just as there's been development of all these tools for cybersecurity monitoring that outsider threats? Are there tools and technologies agencies now have that can help with the human issue here of insider threats?
There are, and this is going back to the fact that this is a technical and a human problem. This kind of helps bridge that gap to some degree, because there are tools of varying degrees that are either out there, conceptual, or everything from just simple alert terms. You know, if you see terms across email messages that have certain words to it, you know, that can be a flag. That's very simple, but there are much more advanced systems either in place or being considered that do much more automated, that can find those things and flag incidents, or flag words, phrases, actions, login actions, actual words, things of that nature. Once again, you're trying to determine is there anything that's not quote-unquote normal, and then that's where you need that between not just a kind of an automated tool, but you need an analyst eyes on target. What, to the degree it's not normal, what is it? What could it possibly be?
When someone is working on a classified network and has clearance to do so, it comes with the expectation that pretty much everything you do is subject to monitoring, and you have no expectation of privacy. And so, as we said earlier, maybe some of the clues might be on the non-classified network that would give clues to what they're going to do on the classified network or do in real space and in actual physical time and space. And so how do you legitimately go after with these tools that you just described for the unclassified work?
That's a good example. I think just like the classified networks, you know, if you're operating as an insider, you know, as an approved insider on a government-owned system, it really doesn't matter if it's classified or unclassified. You have the same level of responsibility. You know, you still get that warning that says your use of this system is consent to be monitored. So that exists whether it's unclassified or a classified system. So being able to get a sense for that. The continuous monitoring—that's the term that's used for this kind of thing—is to get a sense for what's normal or not normal. And to the extent you can determine what that is, that might give clues to the potential for a threat to exist.
We're speaking with Joseph Kirschbaum, Director of Defense Capabilities and Management Issues at the Government Accountability Office. And not to get this too deep into the weeds, but now there is a way for, you know, there's permission under the federal regulations, federal work standards, that people under limited ways can use personal email accounts on their federal networks as long as it's not excessive and so forth and doesn't violate any other principle or use policy. Is it possible to monitor that also, even though it's their Gmail account and they're at, you know, xyz.gov?
Yes, because once again, as long as that is on a government-owned system, you are still covered by that that warning that you are consenting to be monitored. Now, the degree to which those emails and things are monitored, I really have no sense for what levels those might be. But you can still there are still ways to help look across those systems and try to find instances where there might be actions out of the norm.
So the same tools could find the context for words and phrases and relationships there as well as on the official email.
Yes.
And what about social media? I mean, personally, I'm a very light user of it, and I'm appalled at what I see people put on social media that have other domains in their life where you wouldn't indulge in that kind of thing. And so does that now, within GAO's recommendation sets and your research, does the activities of people on social media come into the whole insider threat analysis?
Social media is indeed a whole nother realm. I mean, it's one of those things that, for example, when we talk about, when I talk to people who are potentially interested in government employment and they're thinking about working in areas that require them to have a security clearance, I'm usually remind them it's probably a good idea to monitor what you do on social media, because that's a good indication of kind of who you are. So you need to think about that. And, to some degree, as you pointed out, you look at what's on social media, it's a pretty good indication of kind of what someone thinks or not thinks. I think from our perspective, we didn't really look at the degree to which those things might be monitored, because you're obviously outside of DOD-owned systems, so they can't really monitor those things in that way. I suppose in terms of a counterintelligence investigation or something like that, they might be able to, the federal authorities might have some access to those accounts, but that would require, that would require much more than Department of Defense does on a day-to-day basis.
So to wrap this all up, what are GAO's major recommendations for physical insider threat security and for cyber insider threat security, and especially as to where those two areas interact and intersect?
Our chief recommendations are actually very common for us. As I mentioned before, when we look at things like how the DoD does what they call force protection or security, they have a lot of very good and robust processes and procedures that they followed for years, and they've been very successful, and our work has shown that. What we see is, in this case, insider threats involve so many different parts, so many different pieces, and it cuts across a lot of those. We ended up looking at those minimum standards that were set in 2011, and that the department was more or less following. And by minimum, I mean minimum. And we looked across a lot of those existing policies, or force protection, counterintelligence, counterterrorism, and workplace violence. And we found a lot of these things that were would really set up the department to be operating on a much higher level. So we laid these out in a framework for the department that also highlighted examples where they were doing things in individual programs that were over and above those minimum standards. And what we recommended to the department was that they take a look at these and find ways to look at this as a framework and kind of set up their programs at that higher level. And they agreed with that, and they are actually in the process of doing things like that. The other thing we recommended is very common for us to recommend, because it's a very common way for the department to look at anything from operations to acquisition planning. And that's a basic risk management structure. They have risk assessments for individual programs out the wazoo, and they tend to be at the technical level, and they're very good in and of themselves. But at the insider threats, at its heart, we're looking at cutting across so many different things. You need it raised to that next level. How are things working? Where are the overall threats? What are the overall vulnerabilities, and what are the consequences so that we can apply resources? So we recommended that they do more of those risk assessments at that level. And then one of the other key things that we recommended from the results looking at the recommendations from the Fort Hood shooting was we found some gaps in information sharing, or basically even installations that had followed some of the recommendations they were supposed to do. They had really good tips and techniques that they had developed themselves. They weren't necessarily sharing those. And if you're not sharing, your bright example of progress is going to be very isolated. And just like in military history, that tends to be that's the real trick, is being able to develop a system where you can learn a lesson, adapt to it, pass it on, develop training, pass that on, and now you're spreading your success. So we recommend they improve some of their lessons learned programs. Those are the key highlights to our recommendation. And the good news is the department is definitely making progress.
Joseph Kirschbaum is Director of Defense Capabilities and Management at the Government Accountability Office. There's more to the interview. We'll post it all at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.